Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Guess that one of the battlefronts of the sexual revolution, of the marriage revolution, and of the culture wars would end up being the bakery, a place where cakes are baked and people enjoy that little bit of sweet for their day, for their wedding, for their special day, whatever it may be. It has become the battleground for the sexual revolution and for the culture war. There's a story floating around in social media about a cake that was intended to celebrate LGBT and its cause, but ended up, at least according to the person who is making the claim and posting the pictures on social media, ended up being a slur against homosexuals. We're going to talk about media coverage of an alleged anti-gay cake sold by a Whole Foods store in Austin, Texas. Joining us to do so, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be here.
So for those who have maybe only seen the image or not seen the image of the anti-gay cake allegedly sold there in Austin, Texas, give us the who, what, when, where, why, and how of the story.
Well, as a prodigal Texan and someone who will always be a Texan, no matter if I'm never moving back, there were angles of this thing that just struck me as bizarre right from the get-go. Basically, we have a liberal pastor in Austin, Texas, named Jordan Brown, who's an African-American, openly gay male, who is, he says, doing a church plant called Church of Open Doors. And if you visit their websites or something, there is just like no information at all about this man and his church on there. Anyway, he went to Whole Foods grocery in Austin. And of course, Whole Foods is in and of itself kind of a like the National Public Radio of grocery stores. It's the kind of a cultural landmark in terms of kind of political correctness and whatever. Then you throw on top of it being a Whole Foods grocery store, it's the Whole Foods grocery store in Austin, Texas, which among Texans is commonly referred to as the People's Republic of Austin. It's the capital of the state, but it's also the mecca for everybody in the state of Texas who doesn't actually want to live in the state of Texas, is how I would put it. Austin is to Texas as, say, Chicago is to Illinois, or Atlanta is to Georgia, except even more so. So anyway, he says that he bought this cake, and celebrating gay pride, he wanted "Love Wins" written on this cake, and he requests that it be scrolled around the top edge of the cake. He says he purchased the cake, got outside in the car, and it wasn't till then that he looked down or got home or was on his way home or whatever. He looks through the huge, clear window on the top of the cake box and sees that someone has changed the inscription to "Love Wins" and then an epithet you commonly used for gay people, which he found very offensive. He, with the help of a lawyer, which has previously won another a case on discrimination against gays, they call a press conference and decide to sue Whole Foods. In the time since this thing, as you would imagine, immediately went viral, leading to a great piece by our dear friend Molly Ziegler-Hemingway at The Federalist on like five ways to not screw up this kind of story. I mean, you know, for reporters, just in terms of how to show a little bit of skepticism. But even in the time after her piece came out and our own Bobby Ross Jr.'s piece came out at Get Religion, other information began to emerge, such as the fact that there were security tapes from the grocery store. And the key thing gained from the security tape is that the seal, the box, he said, was still sealed shut, so he couldn't have changed the inscription on the icing on top of the cake himself. When the security tape shows the cash register scanning the UPC code, UPC label, on top of the box, and in the pastor's video, this label has been moved to the side and the bottom to where it's sealing the box. So something changed before he did his video. Now, there's all kinds of other things here. The point I was interested in after all of this went down is, you're not going to be terribly surprised, that I was curious as to why the mainstream press did next to no investigation or even answer any basic questions about this minister or his church. And we could talk more about that, why I'm interested in that. But, you know, there was a clear religion angle in this piece, and just basically nobody wrote about it.
So what we have here is a likely hoax of some sort.
It certainly appears at that time, and Whole Foods has now sued him back. So they're taking it to the mattresses and going the other way around, and have put out a press release, by the way, noting that in their system of cake baking, they know who did the design and they know who did the icing, and they've gone to the extreme of noting that this the person who did this for Whole Foods and the person thus being accused of this crime is himself a member of the LGBTQ community. So that kind of raises the whole thing up another notch.
It has the distinction, as many of these stories do, whether they're true or not, of going viral before anyone has checked the facts.
Which is the subject of Molly's excellent piece, correct.
And then it has an angle that you have just mentioned here, and I want you to explore that a little bit more, that along with many of the facts and fact-checking goes unexplored, and that is, we're talking here about a professed minister of a church.
Well, yeah, and for years now, I've been telling reporters that, if anything, the world of Protestantism is getting harder and harder to cover, in large part because of the growth of non-denominational churches. Now, let's face it, when something really, really good or really, really bad happens involving a church, it's really nice if that church is a part of a denomination or a body that has a structure or hierarchy. Because at that point, you have the ability to check out basic facts, like, is this person really ordained? How large is this church? Is this church in solid financial condition? Have there been previous controversies involving this church? You have another group of people to which you may address questions if, say, the church leaders, for good reason or bad reason, choose not to talk to you. In this case, we're dealing with one of the worst case scenarios from the viewpoint of a reporter. You have an absolutely, totally non-denominational church. And basically, all you have is what you can learn in public records and also, of course, in Facebook. I thought you'd find it interesting that the slogan of this church, according to their Facebook page, is, "We've taken tradition and religious doctrine and thrown them out the window," is the slogan. When you read what few materials there are at the website, it does appear that this young man, this pastor, he says he grew up the son of a minister, that he began as a youth minister, and they began preaching in his teens. And it would, just from the language and the way he describes what his church does, it would seem to me that his background is Pentecostal. But other than that, there is no information about him at all, other than that he came from Pittsburgh. My simple question, like any church plant these days, though, he's got YouTubes up, and I went and watched a clip from one of his sermons. And I thought it was fascinating, especially when you're dealing with someone who's preaching kind of in the style of the African-American church tradition. There are no pictures in this clip of the congregation at all. And it appears that he's in a very small room, some sort of office maybe, or a classroom. And also, he's very enthusiastically preaching, but there's no verbal feedback coming from the congregation. Or it's like he's trying for a call and response style of African-American preaching, but there's no response coming. So from that point of view, based on what's on YouTube, I don't even know if there's a congregation that exists. You know, I mean, there's no definitive proof of that. So I'm simply suggesting that if we're trying to find a motive, and some media, in particular Texas Monthly Magazine, a progressive magazine in Texas, have raised the question that one of the most mysterious things about this whole story is, what's the motive? And you immediately think that one motive would be money, you know, from a lawsuit. That's what reporters would normally think of. I think we may have another motive here. If you're trying to break into this edgy, progressive market, might the motive for this event have been publicity? If you've got a small, struggling, liberal congregation in Austin, Texas, perhaps the motive here, at least one that should be investigated by reporters, is whether that the minister's been having trouble getting his church established and needed publicity.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of an alleged anti-gay cake sold by a Whole Foods store in Austin, Texas. When we come back, if he were the young reporter reporting on this in Texas, how would he go about it? Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri, and Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're talking with Terry Mattingly about an allegedly anti-gay cake sold by a Whole Foods store in Austin, Texas. Earlier today, we discussed gender-neutral bathrooms with Aaron Wolf, the November elections with Mark and Molly Hemingway, and Jesus Descent into Hell with Dr. Curtis Giese. Now, I know that one of the things that you love about Issues Etc. is the expansive topics we cover. Those are examples, and it's exactly what you'll also get at the 2016 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. You can meet and hear some of your favorite guests discussing topics like biblical womanhood, the end times, law gospel preaching, the conservative reformation, the Lord's Prayer, and the means of grace. Registration for the conference is $100, and child care is available for $35. You can find out more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June the 10th and Saturday, June the 11th in Collinsville, Illinois. Terry, I'm curious, kind of to take you back to the earlier days of your journalistic career. Let's say you are the Cub reporter down in Austin, Texas. I imagine some Texas papers still retain a shadow of a religion desk. How would you approach this story?
By the way, I think there are very few Texas newspapers that have a religion desk left, if you can imagine that. They don't have a religion beat now at the Dallas Morning News.
No kidding.
Which is arguably one of the most important cities in American religion, and that is the dominant media franchise of Dallas. I mean, to me, that's not quite as unbelievable as them not having a reporter covering the Dallas Cowboys, but it's kind of close when you consider how much religion there is in Dallas, Texas. What I do? Well, for starters, as I put it in my piece today, a lot of Texas churches have church on Wednesday night. I don't know if this one does, but I would certainly go to the address of this church and knock on the door tonight. I would imagine that the church service this Sunday, if they hold one, will draw quite a bit of media attention. At the same time, there might be more people show up than normal because of this burst of publicity. Doesn't that make sense? I mean, especially in a town that, like the official motto of Austin is "Keep Austin Weird." You see that on T-shirts and sweatshirts and bumper stickers and everywhere. A reader who I want to give full credit to just about 20 minutes ago, or I posted it 20 minutes ago, a reader at Get Religion who is not a journalist did some interesting research, which I didn't have time to do this morning because I was working on other stuff. Just on the ground at the internet level, he determined that the congregation meets in the community room of an apartment complex and that the official office is a post office box at an establishment called Drive Through Postal, and that there is no, I knew this because I looked at, there is no evidence whatsoever of any kind of church governance or oversight. No implications here. Digging into their listserv, which he did by signing up for their MailChimp listserv account, he found out that all of the recent messages have been urgent fundraising appeals. We can't do this without your financial support. The gospel is always free, but it can be expensive to get it out. One of our goals is to take our services live via webcast. There's been appeals for financial help for the congregation. That's just really basic stuff, and I would assume that reporters would or could or should get to that very promptly.
So what has, I mean, as far as you can tell, what of any of those questions, other than your intrepid commenters at GetReligion.org, what have been answered by the media on a story that is, you know, I can understand why it doesn't run on the 6 o'clock news. The image may be difficult. I have to do some blurring or something on the image.
Right. But, oh, no, this thing went everywhere. This thing went absolutely viral, you know, in terms of coverage. There is all kinds of coverage of this event. And I saw one or two kind of blog commentary pieces yesterday that even visited, they had even visited the church's website, where they even took the trouble to call up the website. Now, this morning, there's a quite lengthy piece from the kind of the political and the legal side of this that ran online. I don't know if it's in print because I'm no longer in Washington, so I can't see the physical paper. There's a fairly lengthy piece that ran this morning at the Washington Post. But once again, there are no questions raised whatsoever about this man as a minister and about the status of his congregation, let alone that might have something to do with the actual content of the story.
When a reporter looks at this story, should they be asking simple questions like, how many people are in the room when I show up for the Wednesday night service? Asking them why they're there, things like that.
Well, I mean, the main thing is you're looking for voices to talk to. At the moment, we have, think of it like a reporter. You have a minister who has sued this group, and he has an attorney. Now that the other group has countersued, is the minister going to be free to talk? The answer is no. So other than anything that he says in a public meeting, and his attorney may even limit his speech there, although it's hard to tell a minister not to talk, one of the main things you're looking for right now is other voices. Did the lay leaders of this congregation, what do they think of this? Who are the lay leaders? I would simply ask the question, are there any other lay leaders? Or, in effect, is this a one-man church who has a couple of people who are attending, and it hasn't even grown to the point that it actually has a structure or anything? In other words, I just think it's interesting to know who this man is and what his church is all about. Parentheses, to what degree does it actually exist, is, I think, a valid question.
What would be different in the reporter's task if this weren't a kind of radically independent, we don't even know if the thing actually exists type of a church? What would be different in the reporter's tasks if it were a Southern Baptist congregation or a Pentecostal congregation?
Well, let's go ahead and say that it was a logical congregation. Let's say that it's a member of the Metropolitan Community Church, which is a nationwide pro-gay denomination, or maybe it's a part of the very liberal United Church of Christ. Let's go that logical direction. In both cases, you would simply contact the local authorities. They would be able to tell you things like, when was the church created, who created it, who are listed currently as lay leaders in the church, you know, who, what form of governance does the church have? In other words, who's responsible for its bills, its actions, the behavior of its pastor? There might be a local superintendent, the kind of the Protestant equivalent of a bishop in the area, who to some degree has oversight, who may or may not be willing to address, you know, this controversy. In this case, they might be able to say, we've already called, the lay leaders of the church knew nothing about this, so whatever the controversy is, the church will not be involved. You could make that as a quote. My point is that journalism is a quest for appropriate, qualified voices with which to gather material on a story. If this was a part of a denomination that had any kind of organization to it, reporters at this point would have other people that could talk and that they could talk to. I think right now this whole angle of the story may shut down because I predict the attorney is going to tell the minister to say nothing.
Is it worth calling the attorney?
I think the attorney is going to say, in light of the countersuit, we have no further comment until we either reach a settlement or whatever. The fact that Whole Foods countersued means that they think they have really strong physical evidence. And sure enough, they not only have commented on their security tape, they have their security tape up on YouTube. So the top of my post from this morning at Get Religion, the lead thing on my post is actually the security tape of this guy checking out of the Whole Foods at the cash register.
There's a bizarre element to this, because this cannot be understood, or at least the story can't be told, I don't think, in full, Terry, without the context of the real-life religious liberty baker slash wedding cake thing that's been going on for about 3 or 4 years.
Wedding cake wars.
Yes.
Yeah, wedding cake wars, flower wars.
How does a journalist in a unbiased way, in an impartial way, make the connection between a guy who claims to have found a slur against homosexuals in the icing of the cake that he ordered to celebrate the LGBT cause, and the story of the half dozen or so bakers who have met with some real financial and business difficulties because they wouldn't bake a cake for a same-sex couple, or
right,
florists who wouldn't provide the flowers?
Well, the transition paragraph there just simply begins, this is about the fifth or sixth time that cakes have been in the news in the last year involving religion, same-sex marriage, or both. That's your transition sentence. I mean, it's relevant because at some point, if this is a fraud, how does an idea enter the mind of the person committing the fraud? whether it's the minister or someone close to the minister or whatever, at that point, this entire wedding cake and gay cake war situation is relevant. You know that's why this went viral. You know that's the context for the blitz of social media that accompanied this. Molly makes an interesting point that this was also a classic example of a case. She compared it to the Dan Rather controversy, where once 60 Minutes had put out this claim that they had a letter, you know, messing up George W. Bush's view of his National Guard, you know, career, and the minute they put this thing up on the screen, all kinds of experts on Selectric typewriters begin calling in and went, that couldn't have been done on a typewriter. That had to be done on a computer, which meant it was done after the date they claim, which means it's fraud. In this case, you have all kinds of people out there in the world today with high-res cameras and high-res screens who have taken this image of this cake, blown this thing up to like satellite-level photography, mm-hmm. you know, like it's the face of the moon, you know, and are analyzing the color saturation of the icing, and they have found 30% more yellow pixels in this, you know, and the breadth of the icing is 30 to 40% smaller than on the other letter. I mean, you wouldn't believe the kind of sleuthing that has come out of the general public on this sort of thing. All of which raises the question, how do you just run this story right off the bat without really thinking about any of this?
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Coming up next on Lutheran Talk Radio 24/7, today the church observes the person and work of Martin Luther's own pastor, Johannes Bugenhagen, and we'll get a Bugenhagen biography from Dr. Kurt Hendel right after the live broadcast of Issues, Etc. That's at issuesetc.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio mobile app. Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., we'll discuss Pope Francis's encyclical on marriage and the family with Dr. Peter Scare. We'll get a review of the movie The Jungle Book from Pastor Ted Giese, and we'll talk to Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer about Jesus the Good Shepherd in the Old Testament. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. Talk with you tomorrow on Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
The third commandment teaches us to remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. We do this when we hold God's word sacred and gladly hear and learn it. Jesus invites the weak and heavy laden to rest in him, our true rest, because his yoke is easy and his burden is light. This weekend, rest in Jesus as you hear his word and receive his gifts. If you are in Southern Illinois, you're invited to join Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstatt to rest in the grace of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Learn more at trinitymillstatt.org.